Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, Danny Fried, CEO of Blueprint. If you're familiar with Blueprint, it used to be called HelloJoy. We talk about it pretty much right away. If you know me, you know my general skepticism around like the self-help stuff. I'm really big in self-education, which you could argue is self-help, but I just think that like having novices scrolling and searching on the internet for their problem that looks and smells most like the one they have and then prescribing solutions in a broad stroke is a dangerous game. That said, the market's gigantic for a reason. It's not just the opportunity because there's so many people looking for it. There's a genuine need for people to have a better, I don't know the word awareness. It's like just a better handle on mental fitness and mental health. This country does a terrible job of providing insurance and medical help for those who are mentally ill. They end up in jail for the most part instead of actually being treated, which is a bad thing. And you know, most jobs and just government things are just not set up to really deal with it. And we end up calling people crazy, and it's really dismissive, and it's not a very smart way to approach it. And what we don't realize is a lot of that stuff doesn't really, it's not quantifiable, and it's very hard for the clinicians out there and the mental health people out there to facilitate conversations with people because they only spend like 0.25% of their day speaking to a psychiatrist or a psychologist or whatever. The rest of the time they're out in their life living, doing their thing. And there just aren't a lot of tools out there. So one that is now out there that has recently, you know, changed its name and its position away from just B2C to more B2B2C is Blueprint. And Danny Fried just raised a bunch of money to do this. And the idea is pretty simple, taking a lot of the stuff that you would use if you were seeing a mental health professional and giving it to you in the form of an app, simplifying it in the form of a bot that asks you a handful of questions and enables you to basically fill out the things you need to know that the clinician needs to know before they see you next. And just have a general idea of where you are. Are you happy? Are you sad? Why? Do you, you know, can you tell me things about your day? But then taking it a step further and actually quantifying this with statistics. Are you sleeping? Are you getting your exercise? Are you eating poorly? Are you, you know, whatever. Tapping into the Fitbit app and the health app on your phone and being able to track where you're going. Something that we all say, oh yeah, I'm eating well, but in reality we're not. And I think giving the clinicians the ability to have a holistic view of what's going on is super important. And that's what Danny has accomplished here, and I hope that he gets this thing off the ground and helps a lot of people. But before we talk to Danny, we got to check in a little startup inbox. There are founders out there. If you want to have your question read on the show, all you have to do is email hello@technori.com or just DM me or DM Technori, any of our social media things, which are at Technori, obviously. Regulating the tech industry. Fred Flores, with scandals ripping across the tech sector this past year at Facebook in privacy matters. Don't worry, Mark Zuckerberg said we're a privacy company now, so you don't have to worry about that. When do we stop holding tech companies, or when do we start, I should say, holding tech companies on a pedestal and hold them accountable and allow outside governances to create more responsibility? I couldn't agree more. This is we're in a crazy, unprecedented world. I try to relate the tech world back to the physical world in the sense of, like, if you look at the internet and ISP, I look at that like a street. If I live in Glen Ellen, which I do, and if I have ordinances and things like that that I need to pay attention to, I guess I look at the internet the same way. Like, I wouldn't want inappropriate things popping up and selling inappropriate things to children or to around people near schools or whatever the case may be. It doesn't always have to be bad. I wouldn't want that to pop up there, so I also wouldn't want it on the internet. And I think we've gotten to this point where everyone just assumes if you don't know what the product is, you are the product. And then the next thing is like, we're okay with that. That's a dangerous world because your data and your information is being used to determine your credit, what you can buy, where you can live, who can hire you, who you can work for, how long you can work there. And we're just taking that for granted. Taking for granted that it's like literally one click away from combining your search history. Yes, even your search history in incognito mode, even that, can be tied to your credit your name, your profile, anything you've uploaded, anything you've done, bought, sold, made, whatever. And you create this reputation economy, and we're just rapidly heading there. Now, that said, everyone's in it. So, like, I guess it's one of those things where if everyone has shitty credit, then what is the difference? But I do think it's a dangerous place. And here's what I'm going to say, and I'll end it here. We don't understand. I do. Our governing body does not understand, as referenced by the committee interview of Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, how do you make money? And he had to say advertising about 1,000 times. The governing people do not understand, nor do many of the people actually on the platforms. They don't understand fundamentally how the technology works and how it translates into dollars. And if you don't understand that, how in the hell can you govern it? Education is first. People need to understand how these things work, how they make money, and how they grow and scale, and what their next evolution is going to be. You can't govern something you can't predict. And we're just now getting into a place where technology is moving so absolutely rapidly that you literally can't even project where we're going to be in 5 years, let alone 5 months, or 15 years, or 50 years. All the projections are complete bullshit until we get to that point. So, yeah, I think let's stop holding them on a pedestal now, I would say, is a good time. And let's spend some time trying to identify how they make money and what is actually good for the world, and not just like what some tech bro said is good for the world. So with that said, is there a better transition to Blueprint than that? Danny Fried, the CEO of Blueprint, on mindfulness and how to take care of ourselves and be more self-aware. This is my interview with Danny Fried, CEO, founder of Blueprint. I'm just going to start asking around that. Blueprint, that is a new thing. What is, I got to know, like, what's going on with the name, the change and all that? What are we doing?
Yeah, so the new name's Blueprint.
Okay.
Formerly known as Hello Joy.
Yep.
The reason it was Hello Joy was back for our old days, we were building this chatbot product, and the name of the chatbot was Joy. So you would prompt everything by saying, Hello Joy. Exactly. It made a lot of sense then. We were also building more consumer self-assessment, self-monitoring technology. So we wanted it to be a little bit more playful, a little bit more consumer friendly.
Yeah.
When we made the shift to be more clinical, we kept the name around at the time because we were still just experimenting. But we started getting feedback that it was a little bit too playful and not medical sounding enough. So in the past couple months, we've been trying to figure out what the new name is. Landed on Blueprint. It was quite the process, but we're excited about Blueprint and where it's going.
So you're obviously a young entrepreneur, but it's a young company. You guys have raised some capital. I don't know how much you can or can't talk about that. If you guys, it's official though, right?
It's official. Yeah, it'll be announced April 2nd.
Okay,
yeah.
So you've raised some capital. Talk to me a little bit about this part of this, because there's a pivot in the business, which I want to talk about, but I also want to talk about the name change, because it's your baby.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult, and it takes, you know, companies spend a ton of money trying to do rebranding and name change and stuff like that. How have you gone about it? Like, what was the thought process around, like, coming up with a new name?
It was a lot of just, like, banging our heads against the table and trying to figure out what was right. I think when push came to shove, we really sat down and thought about, like, what we wanted to represent, what emotions we wanted to invoke with our name, and then got feedback from the people who really mattered for us, which were clinicians, and how were they going to respond to the name, and how were their patients going to respond when they said, hey, patient, you should start using Blueprint. I'm going to enroll you on that platform.
So talk to me a little bit about the actual, like, business, and then I want to go back and compare a little bit about what it was before as a consumer product to now, because you're sort of like, the way, if I understand it correctly, it's a B to B to C sort of model here. So talk about Blueprint, like what it is exactly right now.
Sure. So we have a software platform for psychiatrists and therapists. They can enroll their patients onto our mobile app. And what we do is we collect a bunch of different data points and measurements between each appointment. So we ask about things like symptom severity and mood and energy. We also collect things in the background like exercise, sleep, and movement right off the phone. We take all that data, we share it back with their clinician at the follow-up visit, and they can use that to make smarter treatment decisions.
Okay. So walk me through what it was when it was Hello Joy.
So when it was Hello Joy, it was sort of just the patient side of things. It was just consumers, self-monitoring, self-assessments. We would have this daily conversation with you, ask you a bunch of questions, collect a bunch of information, send you some of these standardized assessments that we're still using today. And then once a week, we would analyze your conversation, look at the text, look at the results, and share back this report with you. So it was sort of like a quantified self for your emotional health, your brain health. What we saw pretty early on was that report was always the highest day of engagement when we would send it out. That was when people came back. It was why people started checking in and answering these questions. And we had, after 12 months or so, like over 100,000 people who had used it. And as we talked to the top users, we learned that almost all of them were seeing some sort of mental health professional, psychologist, a psychiatrist, whatever it might have been. The most extreme case was some of them were actually screenshotting this report, printing it out, which is not easy to do, and bringing it to that next visit. And so we sort of realized there's something here. There's value for the patient. There's value for the clinician. We need to sort of shift how we operate to sit in between the patient and their doctor.
Where do you see the value increase there? Because I can understand it's like one, I mean, how did you guys get to 100,000 users like that? Because that's not easy to do on its own, right? Because you're finding a very niche person to begin with. And then you're seeing the value, like as a bit, like that's a value to customer, but business value, when you go from B to C, basically to B to B to C, how did you see the value of your business shift?
Yeah. So to answer the first question, it was all organic. Like this literally started as a side project. I was working at Trunk Club full time. I started building this for fun because it was interesting. It got picked up by a couple publications early on, which spiked some initial usage. And then we kept getting featured. We were built on Facebook Messenger. So we kept getting featured in Facebook Messenger's like new app marketplace.
Yeah.
And that sort of just actually still to this day continues to bring in new users. In terms of sort of the shift and how we thought about that, we uncovered some interesting learnings around billing codes and reimbursement. And so we've aligned this new clinical product to fit right into those codes. And so now we're collecting this data, which is beneficial for the clinician, use it to be better at what they do, but they can also use it to drive additional reimbursement revenue. So we think that's a huge unlock, and the incentives are actually aligned for them to use our product to deliver better care and earn more money for doing so.
Tell me sort of like what needed to be done from a business standpoint to change from the, not just the name, but like the pivot part. You're raising money, you're kind of going through this whole thing. Like it had to be not easy to like pitch one thing, but see another.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say the biggest thing we started dealing with was we now are part of a workflow, right? A clinician has some workflow. They've got some day-to-day, that's how they operate. That's how they've operated for a long time. And one of the challenges is how do we fit into that and not cause them a ton of extra burden, a ton of extra anguish to just do something new. So that was a big piece. And we're still sort of constantly improving at that. The other sort of black and white thing is HIPAA compliance, right? Before we were just this consumer product operating in sort of a wellness space. And now we are more of a clinical tool for providers. And so we're HIPAA compliant. We have to be.
The one thing that sticks to me is, and I'll use the word stick because it's stickiness is like the key here. I look at a lot of the mindfulness, you know, space things, items like the Calm app and things like that. I'm speaking for myself here. I have always like looked at them and thought like, this is just a really great job of marketing common sense that like I need to like take time for myself. I need to do things that make me feel more at ease. I need to talk through things. Stress is a easy thing to like bundle up on top and then it just sort of gives way. But every time I've been introduced to tools that could help this, it's always short term. I dabble in it. It's not like, I don't know what the right word is. It's not easy for me to stick on it. And the problem, like the positive for you in that is those people are easy to pick up as a one-time customer. So you've got like, these are like downloads, but this is not our active monthly users. And so on one hand, it's like you're making it harder for people to get on it. But on another hand, the only people who get on it are people who are going to use it every day. And so what I like what you've done is this pivot away from the sort of like common person use case, which is like, meh, I'll use it or I won't.
Yeah.
And you've gone directly to the route of like, who would be the most likely person to use this and who would be the most likely person to direct this towards someone who should use it? That to me is a very wise decision.
Yeah, I think one of the things we say is we want to drive patient adoption through clinician adoption, right? Like it's a huge difference when you discover Headspace on the App Store or Calm or whatever it is and you decide, I'll try it out, versus this is a tool your clinician uses with their patients. It helps them be better at their job. And so they're recommending you to start using it to help them.
Yeah. And also, like, just say nothing of the fact that the market for people who are, it's not just self-help, but people who are actively seeing or seeking treatment is ginormous.
Totally.
It's more than people would probably know. And so, like, what are some of the key pieces of feedback you've gotten from clinicians? Like, what are they seeing as a value to them? And then what are you seeing as a value to the customer, the actual user?
Yeah, so...
I guess they're both technically users in this
case. Yeah, which is interesting. So I think in terms of one of the key things that we provide is you spend 99.6% of your time outside of the doctor's office with this behavioral health clinician. But traditionally, that's all you had was that 30 minutes every once a week, every two weeks. We're extending that in a way that's efficient for the clinician. We're not sending emails to them at 2 a.m. We're not sending text messages to them, but we're collecting this valuable information, keeping their patient connected between appointments, and then sharing it back with them so they can actually use it to do things like adjust medication or adjust dosage. Really have this real, hopefully, blueprint to guiding their patient.
Nice name drop, by the way.
To the right path of remission. And everything we do is based on this methodology called measurement-based care, which has been around for decades, but it's not really widely adopted because it's really cumbersome to do these things on your own, to deliver these assessments, to score them, document the results over time, and then do that for all of your patients.
I was just going to get into that. So we're gonna go into that next year, because people watching or listening probably would think that I should seek help, but I haven't sought help yet. But I do know people who have and do. And it is a very, you said the word cumbersome, it is a very cumbersome, challenging thing, not only for the clinician because of the paperwork and the grind, but it's also, and you would think that, like, with mobile apps and like mobile phones, like, this is not new.
Yeah.
It's like a decade long that we've had the Notes app is not new.
Right.
But it just doesn't work that way. And people's lives don't work in a way where I can just, like, cop a squat real quick and note that I'm pissed. And I'm having a bad, you know, day or whatever, and like journaling everything and then telling you, like, here's what I ate and what I, you know, did and what I, you know, if I drink alcohol and whatever. People don't live like that.
Right.
And so it's either a combination of just not doing it at all or filling out inaccurately or just like filling in the holes and not being very, you know, forthcoming with it. And then handing it over to the clinician who's going to analyze it. And probably it's going to be 2 or 3 visits between the next time that you were able to be like reading notes compared to whatever. It is impossible. And so what you guys have done, I think, is the real key here for the clinician side. Let's focus on that for a second. Is you've given them a way to enable or empower their what, patients in this case, to keep them up to speed with what's going on and to make it not impossible for them to stay sort of have a finger on the pulse of the lives of all the people that they're seeing.
Exactly. Yeah. And the patient actually can see the tangible progress they're making too, right? Like, they have this dashboard, which is huge.
It's like small wins, which is like what they need most is to know, like, even a small improvement is like a major deal.
Totally.
You know, and so like that, let's go to the next side of this, which is the user, the actual patient. I think having the ability, I don't think there's any question that for the majority of people out there, especially those that are in that like semi OCD category that I am in, lists help. Like, being able to chart things out and track in my mind my behavior, when I don't do that is when all this shit goes awry. That's when I lose control of my life almost, because I can't see what's happening. And I think you create an opportunity for people to sort of chart out blueprint, like you said, blueprint of like, this is what I should be doing today versus what I did yesterday, and here's the results. I'm seeing more progress in these key areas. What are some of the key areas you talked about in that the existing management cycle?
So we, like, in terms of the assessments.
Yeah, the assess. So like, what are the things that you've kind of carried over from the assessment make it sort of a modern version?
Yeah. So we do like 3 types of assessments. The first are standardized. So those are things that have been around for decades. They've traditionally lived on pen and paper. So things like, one of them is a PHQ-9 is one of them. There's different assessments for different disorders.
Yep.
These are helpful because clinicians already know what they are. They know how to score them. They know how to interpret them. What we do is we automate the delivery, automate the scoring, automate the documentation. That's the first type of assessment. They're multiple choice questions, self-report. The second type are daily check-ins. And so these are meant to capture, right now in the moment, how are you feeling? We're going to send you a quick notification. You're going to take 30 seconds, answer this interactive questionnaire, and that's it. And the patient can actually pick what time of day they want to complete that. Most people choose like once in the morning, once at night, and the clinician can actually configure which questions they should be answering. The third type of assessment, which I think is really interesting, is all in the background. So when you sign up, you give us access, if you want, to your location, your health kit. And so we can pull out of that from those data streams, exercise, sleep,
and movement. So your behavioral analysis and
behavioral
physical
signals, yeah. And so I think like long term, what we'd like to move towards is knowing your symptom severity, knowing your mood without having to ask you. Yeah. And so there's certain things within those that we might be able to do one day. Right now, it's a separate data stream that's really beneficial. For example, knowing how much you're sleeping over time can be a huge indicator and also a huge lever to pull as a clinician. We should focus on sleep because you're not getting enough sleep.
Yeah. No, I think it's like I look at do you guys take money from Hyde Park Angels?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know Pete Wilkins is very big into this whole thing. And you should reach out to him. He's working on putting together a challenge, or he'll reach out to you about sort of mindfulness, physical activity, and entrepreneurship. You know, the ability to manage sleep is number one, stress shown in the heart rate. And you could look at it two ways. You could look at it as like activity, footsteps, or just weight gain, obesity. They almost run parallel with revenue.
Yeah.
Like it almost runs exactly parallel with like the business and how well it's going. And you'll see like the negative, you see the whiplash of like things are going really good. They go too good and you start to lose interest in yourself and you start to get, you know, hedonistic and ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then you rein it back in and it's like up is one, down is the other, up is the other. And I think that you can absolutely use this as a tool to monitor when somebody says I'm not feeling well. It's like, well, have you been eating well? It's like, well, yeah, I'm fine. Right. You're like, well, really?
Yeah.
Because it's not like you're not sleeping. Like I can as a clinician start to ping you ahead of time and say, hey, listen, you know, we've noticed that your behavior lately has been sort of off.
Exactly.
Let's start with that before we start changing dosages.
Totally.
Let's try to get back on ball here.
Yeah. And it's just a hard question to answer. It's not like intentional you're trying to lie, right? It's
you
just
don't
like
know. I mean, you don't track it actually.
Exactly. It's like you're biased by what's happening right now or what happened yesterday. Like, I don't know what happened. I couldn't tell you an objective answer what happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But typically, that's the first question people get asked when they come into an appointment is how have things been going over the past week or 2 weeks, which is just tough. But yeah, I think sleep is definitely a really interesting, I think, high leverage one.
Yes.
That is often overlooked. Like, I know myself, like, I need 7.5, 8 hours or I can just...
Sleep for me, this is gonna like, this is how deep, like I don't look like it, but I actually try to pay attention to this. To me, sleep is often a byproduct of, for me, like water consumption. Like, am I drinking enough water? Am I on the go? Am I not paying attention? Too much coffee, too much stress. And then what ends up happening is lack of sleep, which immediately impacts my diet, which immediately impacts my lack of fitness, which immediately impacts whether I take a cab to work instead of walk, which immediately impacts whether I'm tired, which immediately impacts if I'm going to drink. You know, I have cocktails as a stress.
Right. And your phone and all the connected services probably knows all that stuff about you. We just are not harnessing it.
Yeah. And that, like, I could tell you, I pay attention to that, but most people don't.
Right.
I know that. I know that I can start getting my diet back in line just simply by drinking water instead of soda. I know that if I get sleep on consecutive nights, I wake up feeling better. The likelihood of me taking shortcuts during the day is a lot less. If I get a string of 2 or 3 good days in a row, the likelihood of me going off the rails with my diet is less. If I'm working out in the middle of it, I'm not going to eat and drink and do certain things because I have to work out the next day.
Right.
It all works together, and all of that connects into like my output.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's just like, I think if you could have something that we could, well, we do, Blueprint. Something that you can like connect in with. Very cool. So this is super exciting, super cool stuff. I've always felt like, especially with the medical apps and things, you need to have a doctor, you need to have a professional who's monitoring, and you should not be relying on just random shit on the internet. But I've always thought that one, especially with the Mindshare stuff, I've always thought what would be really cool, and you were getting pretty close to it, is like the bot that's my friend. So like, if I could imagine interfacing with Blueprint, basically like Danny's my friend and you're texting me, hey man, how you feeling today? Thumbs up, and I hit it and it goes back to you, thumbs up. And then you text me for half hour, 40 minutes later. Oh, I'm glad to hear it's good. you know, what's the best thing that you've done today? And you text it back, oh, you know, whatever. If you could create it in a way where it's literally like that, or hey, it's the end of the week, Danny, I'm gonna, you know, Danny's emailing me a report that I got to fill out before the end of the day. I feel like I'm actually interfacing with you, and it's not just like a random app that I have to open and fire up.
Right.
And that was the part about what you when I first heard this was like, okay.
Yeah, it's still really interesting. It's really, really hard to make it like engaging and stay engaging over time. I know there's a couple companies, probably more than a couple companies now, who are working on it.
Yep.
So we'll see. I think also what we started thinking about it in terms of like, if when we started to think more about, we want it to be this like coexisting with treatment. Ultimately, the chat solution was actually competing with a real live therapist too. Yeah. But some of the benefits you get from this chat solution is it's available 24/7.
Yep.
It's in your pocket, and it's typically going to be much cheaper. So there's really interesting parts around that.
I'll tell you, I mean, this is just as a person who's been pitched some things like this, the part that I'm always leery of is you're not now Blueprint today is a different company. Hello Joy version is competing. It's a content company.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 100%. End, you end up getting yourselves put in a position where you've just got to keep coming up with new content, like exactly. like a magazine.
Yeah. Which we were doing for a little bit. It was and a lot
what,
of work.
Yeah. And at what point do you run out of good shit to say?
Yeah.
And you forget that the people who are using this, some of them have very serious illnesses.
Right.
And they're relying on your best wishes thought of the day.
Right.
And you start throwing Jack Handy shit out there for older people who know SNL reference. You literally could do damage.
For sure.
And that's why I see some of those apps having a hard time. It's like you just have to keep coming up with a different way to package Gandhi's quotes. Like,
yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Versus now, when I look at what you're doing, it's like, no, there's an actual professional clinician who's speaking directly to that person with a reference point.
Exactly.
And we're just here to sort of like make everyone, both people in the room, know the most about each other that they humanly can.
Exactly. Yeah, it's much more focused of what problem we're actually solving versus... Like the shift we made was actually, okay, with the bot, we wanted to keep people around as much as possible. It was sort of an engagement play, right?
Yep.
Keep people engaged, keep people coming back, and keep them using our product for as long as possible. Now we want people to be checking in frequently, but we actually design the experience to get them in, get them out as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
We don't want you browsing our app. We want you to complete the measures, complete the assessment, and then do that as efficiently.
Which is great because you can put as much focus as you did put in the long-winded content game into like three really, really sharp strokes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Boom.
Get in, get out. And no one wants to, I mean, you're not going to be browsing your app 99% of the time.
Yeah. And I would hope that these, like, quite honestly, I would hope that these people, when they are in a problem moment or a happy moment, that they would choose not to open up an app and text the app for help. They would rather call someone who can help them.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is very cool. I want to ask the last thing is, you know, what do you see as sort of the first next evolution of this as you start to get product market fit, things start rolling? What's the thing you got to get right?
Yeah, great question. So we are really focused right now on making it easy for a single clinician to get 100% of their clients or their patients using the product on the platform. We've got clinicians using it. We got them using it with handfuls or dozens of patients each. But right now we're really laser focused on how do we ingrain this into their day-to-day so that this is something that is built into their workflow, right? It's something they're used to. When they bring on a new patient, of course they're going to be using this platform. And so that's what we're focused on. As we start to find that, then we'll start to sort of pour gasoline on the fire and expand to as many clinicians as possible.
Awesome. This is great. Where do people go to learn more about it?
Blueprint-health.com.
Very cool. You can learn more about upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities. Check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social @Technori. You can follow me @Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.